So, herzlichen Dank für den Kommen und danke zu den zwei Künstlern, Wolfgang Spahn, Christian Fauber. Ich bin Bob Gottlieb. I think we're going to switch to English. How many people do not understand any German here? One person, two people? Okay. So let's keep it in English. Thank you very much for coming, everybody. Thank you to Wolfgang and Christian here for also for coming and for doing this wonderful show, almost revolutionary show, I can say. We'll see in the history of media art in this city, there's been a lot of exciting shows, but there's something special about this one, I think, in my experience, that you've done something that at least points to some new directions, and that's why I think it has a kind of a epochal feeling. So we're going to have a short discussion. I'm going to kind of moderate and just try to get more information out from both of these two. And then as we go along, I will ask also to you if you have any burning questions, curiosities, worries, concerns, etc. So let's start, I guess. Should we talk about the title of the show and how you came to this title and what symbolic symbols are being grounded?
Well, it's a wordplay, first of all, because it's not symbol grounding but symbolic grounding, right. which gives it a twist. It's more so. It's more about grounding than about symbols. And it's maybe more of trying to ground knowledge. Let's put it like that. So in that sense, it's a symbolic grounding, I would say. But
and what knowledge are you?
But first, for those who don't, I'm not. Who is familiar with the term of symbol grounding, or the symbol? Who has ever heard of the symbol grounding problem? And it's a kind of like. For people, it's a special term that came up maybe in the 80s in cognitive science, when with the first arisal of connectionist networks, which are basically nowadays what is discussed under deep learning. The predecessors of those were the connectionist networks of the 80s, and they were being used for a number of tasks. Of abstract tasks, so people were showing that you could, for example, differentiate words, and then someone came up with this criticism and said, "Well, you're doing this all on a computer as a symbol manipulation process, but how do you connect it to the real world? How do you ground your symbols?" That was the symbol grounding problem. Someone formulated that as a problem, and there was no solution to that. So you could not use these networks for real-world tasks because they were not grounded in the real world. So that's kind of like it's playing with this term, but it's changing it into symbolic.
Right. So the symbols were generating networks or network phenomena in the virtual space.
Yes.
In simulations.
Yes. Yes.
Purely digital, hermetic, abstract.
Absolutely.
Mathematical symbols,
yes.
In a way.
Yes.
In the end.
Yes.
And so what you're pointing to here with this work, and also the question was, so grounding means like, anchor it in reality, whatever reality is, which is extremely complex, much more complex than the digital world.
Exactly. And there's another hint maybe to pull in Wolfgang, and that is when you deal with electronic circuits, you are playing with virtual grounds. Maybe you can say something on grounding.
Yeah, certainly. You need for these whole systems that we build up, that are all connected together, they need a common ground. So that is the basic we have. So on from that on, we can play and change the pattern of the whole network, and makes these different appears of the structure the network gives.
Common ground means common electrical ground?
Yeah.
That it has to go, like,
No, the Earth, common Earth ground is something else,
okay.
But that is, but we don't need that.
Okay.
The common ground is okay, is enough.
Although in the center you replaced, you made it to the Earth ground, right? Isn't that a modification?
Yeah, but
let's not get confused in the metaphors. But it is so tricky to avoid falling into metaphors and thinking that you really understand something when you don't, when you're still dealing with metaphors and you're, and the relationship between the metaphor and the phenomena that you're trying to describe is not clear. So. Wir können das in so zwei
schickt ab und an.
Mhm. Ja, können versuchen, oder?
Ja.
Ja, so zweimal erzählen. Ja, einmal auf Englisch und einmal
auf Deutsch. Ja, wir können so paraphrasieren auf Deutsch nochmal vielleicht.
Genau. Ja,
ich kann das
okay.
Ja machen. Also dieser Term,
ja.
Symbolic Grounding, kommt aus der Kognitivwissenschaft. Und der hat dieses Problem, in dieser Kognitivwissenschaft geht es eigentlich immer oder geht es häufig darum, dass man Systeme hat, die miteinander agieren und dann zusammen eben komplexe Sachverhalte oder Systeme oder Muster entstehen. Und da ist es natürlich wichtig, dass diese Systeme, die zusammenwirken, einen gemeinsamen Ground, also einen gemeinsamen Boden haben oder und den, wenn der eben nicht gegeben ist, dann würde diese ganzen Zusammenagieren nicht mehr funktionieren. Und dieses Problem wurde dann eben Symbolic Grounding oder Symbolic Ground genannt, das eben als Kritik für manche Systeme, die das nicht haben. Und wir haben eben auch deswegen diesen Titel dafür gewählt und gleichzeitig ist das etwas, was für uns natürlich eine wichtige Basis ist, diesen gemeinsamen Ground, gemeinsamen, in der Elektrik sagt man dann, diesen Minuspol zu haben, den gemeinsamen. Und der ist eben essentiell wichtig in solchen komplexen Netzwerken. Ein bisschen auf Deutsch zusammengefasst. Ja.
Ja, und ich wollte dazu so anschließen mit deiner Frage über Metaphorik. So hier in diesem Bereich, so in Elektronik, in Computersimulation und so weiter. Und auch in der öffentlichen, so herkömmlichen Presse zum Beispiel, wenn man über Neural Networks redet. Häufig, dass wir so mit Metaphoren, mit Metaphorik über die Themen besprechen, ohne die Metaphoren zu erden,
finde ich ja auch, also sozusagen die symbolische Erdung,
ja.
Als wenn man es übersetzt, finde den Titel im Deutschen, macht der nochmal so einen anderen Assoziationsraum auf. Und genau, es geht eigentlich auch so ein bisschen drum, I do it in English and I paraphrase it. So it's about, of course, presenting different metaphors. So there, obviously, a lot what we are dealing here with, we only understand through metaphors. So, for example, I can't claim that I understand electricity. I have a metaphorical view on electricity. When we talk about electrons, it's an abstract concept, right? It's a metaphor. It's tiny, I think of tiny balls, but of course an electron is not a tiny ball. And it's yet a different metaphor from, for example, computation, where it's about, for example, storage and reading and writing operations. And that's where these different metaphors come into play.
I think that's a good point because especially in digital worlds, you can think about symbols are the basic of the computation, and what we have here is something different. It's about structures that appears when these different neurons interact. And what we did in all, I would say, these are four artworks, and all in these four artworks we visualize these structures and we zonificate these structures. So you you can see how this pattern change over time with the printer over a long period, or you can hear it on this installation in a higher frequency, so it's an audio, it's a structure in an audio range, or you see it in the more artistic approach with the motors spinning and or in this bag where the liquids visualize the structures. And
also nochmal zum Zusammenfassen. Okay, then we don't do it.
Okay.
Only that's good. We only do it on demand. That's good. to keep a common ground. So we are discussing the same thing.
Right. To know where we are.
Yeah.
So okay. So keeping to this question of metaphors, how close or when you speak of these neurons that you've produced here, that you and Wolfgang have produced. So how closely do they model or emulate the form or the function of neurons that you study in neuroscience?
Maybe to give a number, I would say something like 10%.
10%, okay.
The nervous system is so complex. So if you just think of like the hormonal regulation, for example, mm-hmm. that's a system that's far from being understood. If you eat a bit more zinc, then your state of mind might change, and you can't explain. So there, But to better answer your question, it is. When we talk about neurons here, it's a rough abstraction of specific phenomena. And what is modeled here is not on the single neuron level, because when you look at single neurons, they have certain activity patterns. They have what is called spikes, so they don't just go on and off, but they create bursts of activity that you can even listen to. And this is abstracted away, it's ignored. And it's like looking, if you consider like something like 50 neurons and then you average across what they are doing, then you get closer to what we are modeling here. So it's a model not of single neurons, but of what is called population code. The idea that that things are really distributed in the brain and that there's not one neuron standing for one thing, but populations approximating the world out there.
I would say the idea of these neurons, was an abstract idea to find a model how thinking process could work. So the scientists thought about an idea, okay, when we have this neuron that bursts, that gives information from one neuron to another, how could they work? So that maybe there's one neuron that gives a positive output and the other one maybe don't give any at all, and they react different on different inputs differently. So they developed some models how a system could work. And these models were used now in computer science and machine learning a lot, and they implement these models in computer code, and that's how Google makes their machine learning and everything. And we use this model and make a circuit that behaves like one of these models. So it's a long way from an idea that someone saw how maybe this brain could work, to make a model how it could work, and we use the model for making our analog neurons. So on that way, I guess a lot of.
And then the one very other important aspect is that in this model, what is really important is the temporal dynamics. So how in time these populations work. And it's a model of oscillation, basically. So the motivation to come up with this model was to explain how rhythm can organize on its own. So for example, how does the heart know how to beat? Is there like a computer telling it, create a beat now? Is same for the respiration. What is driving respiration? How, and that's the background of these models. So they have an inherently different background than, for example, the models to explain cognition. You know? They are very much concerned about time and
mechanical,
and also how they interact. But that was kind of like one of the fundamental. It was more an epistemological question. So how can that be that a system generates a rhythm, and thus this rhythm has to be specified somewhere or not? And that's also a difference to what when you hear today about neural networks, they come often from a different tradition. They come from this idea from McCullough and Pitts, who sort of like, who basically reduced the neuron to a switching device. And that created the metaphor that if a neuron is just a switching device, then you can think of a computer as a neuron, as a brain. I mean, that's where the metaphor comes from, where people say the computer is the brain. And that is because McCullough and Pitts reduced the neuron. I mean, if you look at the neuron, it's something it does, for sure. It can be on or off. And that discovery that you can reduce the neuron to this on and off went hand in hand with the discovery of the transistor. And if you so historically, if one wants to explain why people thought of the computer as the brain, that's where it's rooted. But nobody there cared about time, for example. And that's fundamentally here.
Right.
Because there's a big difference, because we are so used, for me it was so important to experience to make a system that generates pattern, and normally I'm used to do that with digital systems. So I have to program them, and I design my pattern and something. And here it was something I can play with, and they appear, and they are stable, and I can change them, and I don't understand them. It's really fascinating. If you put three of these neurons together, or four, you don't understand really why this is going on now for half a second, or not, or after that one, and so on. So it immediately, instantly becomes super complex. And at the same time, it's a super stable system. So you patch here everything with everything, and there was no problem. There's no point where we put something in and it stops working or anything like that. So you can really play with it, and yeah, it just changed the pattern. And at the same time, it was super fascinating to see that this whole network works so well that I even can take out parts. Neurons, whole neurons I can take out, or even parts from the neurons, and it still makes a pattern. So, and then that was something that was super fascinating for me to see, okay, this network, that's a completely different approach to these digital centralized controlled systems we are using normally. It's something completely different. It's really interacting. Every device here in the room interacts with over some other neurons with the other together and form a big pattern that's changing over time. And that is, maybe it's a point, maybe some more artistic approach in this discussion, because for me, the idea of why I wanted to build these neurons was I'm working a lot with pattern over a long, long period. And patterns that change over time has a beauty for me. And to have a system that does that, and who it's not like a repeating pattern, it's always the same, it's always a bit different. You don't know precisely how it is different. So, but a little bit change always over time. So you have a constantly new generating pattern on an analog way, because it reacts on the environment. Light change a little bit, or if the temperature change, we even put temperature resistors in it, so the pattern change, and with that the appearance, the sound, the light change as well. So whatever we try to do is here really organic way of visualizing, sonificating pattern.
Right. So coming back to these neurons that we have here that you're calling neurons, right? They're pop neurons. You said that they are they represent not single neurons but populations of neurons.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they're called
populations.
population neurons. Or pop.
That's why they call them pop neurons.
Pop neurons, right.
So I can call them pop neurons because, yeah, you like the
like
sound of it.
But they represent small communities. Can you say that? Or
yes.
Small?
Yes. Yeah.
And then so there is some kind of communication inside each neuron, and could you say some kind of computation going on there?
Yeah, I mean, that is a discussion if it's a
computation
or not.
Because we're calling it analog.
Yes. Well, what you, if you, I mean, if you take the model again, what you do is you assign to 50 neurons as a model, like instead of measuring them, you assign one single state variable. So you say that it's all abstract. They are what the individual one does is abstracted away. I mean, that's problematic, by the way, as well.
Yeah.
But that's abstracted away, and you have like one, you just at the state of this system, and that state can go from on to off.
And everything in between?
And everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
And that is sort of, and how that changes is a function of how you set up the electronics, how much feedback on itself you give it, and how it's inter. And what is also interesting, these oscillations you're seeing and hearing here, you don't get it from one single population neuron. You only get it when you connect two of them in very specific ways, so that one activates the other and the other one deactivates the first. So it's a bit how to think about this, like two things struggling for something, one trying to shut off and the other one trying to turn on, and that creates then an oscillation of on off and everything in between. But it's really what is going in there is just one variable, so it's really abstracting away what the individual's neurons in the population would do, and they are not modeled at all.
And I would say the computing in some way happens because the connection between the neurons has a certain weight. And that means, in our case, a certain resistor. That means how much one neuron influences another one, that depends on the resistor in between. And so if you have a lot of these neurons and they're all triggering one neuron, then you have different weight and certainly different timing, so it goes on and off, then there is a certain point where it also starts to fire, or not, or a long period where it don't fire at all, and that makes the complexity comes in, and it's in that way some kind of computing, because yeah, certainly you have the information from different things with a different weight in a different timing, and that the sum of it triggers at a certain moment. Yeah, but yeah.
But there's absolutely no digital computing here.
No, not at all. And there's no central computing. I think that is the for me much more important than the digital one. It's anyway super analog.
Mm-hmm.
It was my first exhibition where I didn't brought my laptop for the opening for a security update. but it also is decentralized. So and I think that is something we are so used, that is what I found out, we are so used to this digital world that we have a central core that calculates everything, and we start to think in this metaphor of, oh, everything has to have a computer brain and makes a regulation and data mining whatever to come to a solution, and here to find a way and see, no, it's not necessary. You can make really complex things with no central computing, if it's analog or digital or whatever, at all.
So I'll ask one more question, and then hopefully you will be formulating your questions as well. So how did you two come to decide on the structures of the elements, the modules that are here? Like, you took from your...
It was sort of like the lucky combination of two pools of knowledge, I would say. So I have myself a background in working with the models, with abstract models, and then simulating them on digital computers. And I was, since 3 or 4 years I was trying to do something artistically with these models on the computer, and it just didn't work out. I was not satisfied with it, because it always was inside of the computer. You know, you can't fiddle in the same way with this. And Wolfgang had over the last years digging into the history of computation, I would say, and digged out the analog computer. And it was last year that we met. I was conceptually becoming more and more convinced that it was really about the analog things I was looking at, and Wolfgang was also working on the analog computer, and that's so from my perspective, that was like the trigger point where we decided, well, we have to do something together.
And that's how we thought, okay, we make these analog systems. And I would say, because two of these works, we used some classical old instruments, an oscilloscope and this so-called XY recorder. And these are instruments that come from the era of the analog computer. They were used in this time to visualize the computation of these devices. So we thought, okay, we want to have some as well to visualize what we are doing. And on the other hand, both of us said, okay, we take our artistic approach. Christian's, he works more with his motors, spinning motors, and the sound with the strings, and also normally with light, but this is and this time it's no light projection involved, and I work more, or I have a lot of these liquid projections, and so we said, okay, we both take our artistic approach, visualize what our network is doing, and a classical analog computing visualization for that. So. Okay, also ich habe gemeint, wir haben, um diese analogen Systeme sichtbar und hörbar zu machen, haben wir einmal ausgewählt ganz klassische Instrumente, die also bis in die 80er Jahre verwendet worden sind, um Analogcomputer zu visualisieren. Also man muss dazu wissen, so für Analog.
Nee, übersetze ich
nochmal. Also das sind Analogcomputer, sind was anderes als Digitalcomputer, klar, aber die funktionieren ganz anders. Es ist mehr so, man baut eine Schaltung, um was zu modellieren, und die verhält sich dann genauso wie die Rakete, die zum Mond fliegt, und man baut eine Schaltung, die sich genauso verhält, und das wird visualisiert normalerweise, oder wurde früher so visualisiert mit diesen Oszilloskopen, mit diesen analogen, die wir hier haben, und diesen XY-Schreibern. Also das sind wirklich diese alten Geräte, die damals verwendet worden sind. Und es war die eine Idee zu sagen, okay, wir visualisieren das damit. Und das andere war einfach zu sagen, okay, wir nehmen unsere künstlerische Herangehensweise, Christian mehr mit Motoren und diesen Strings und diesen Sound, den er daraus macht, und ich mehr mit meinen Flüssigprojektoren, die eben auf diese analogen Felder mit Magnetfeldern reagieren und die dann eben auch diese Muster sichtbar machen. Also würde ich sagen, so, das sind, wenn man das so ein bisschen kategorisieren will, so diese zwei künstlerischen, auch Sonification natürlich und Visualization, und einmal diese ganz klassischen Instrumente, die da verwendet worden sind.
Und das, was ich vorher gesagt habe, war, dass wirklich auch zwei Wissensfelder zusammengekommen sind, weil ich eben lange nur mit Digitalsimulationen gearbeitet habe, aber von eigentlich analogen Systemen, und damit frustriert war. Also was heißt frustriert? Ich habe versucht, damit was künstlerisch zu machen, aber es kam nicht aus dem Computer raus. Und Wolfgang hat sich auf so eine Reise begeben, eben in die Geschichte des Analogrechnens, hat vor 2 oder 3 Jahren angefangen, einen Analogrechner nachzubauen. Und das heißt, ein Analogrechner ist sozusagen die war eine parallele Entwicklung zu den Digitalcomputern, mit denen man eben sowas wie eine Flugbahn hat vorausberechnen können. Aber eben analog, das heißt nicht mit Symbolverarbeitung, sondern indem man tatsächlich sozusagen analoge Zahlenwerte erzeugt hat. Und da Grundrechnen, trotzdem sowas wie also Addition und Subtraktion und so weiter macht man da eben auch. Und als wir zusammengekommen sind, ich hatte auch so eine Überzeugung entwickelt, dass das analog eine ganz wichtige Rolle spielt. Wolfgang arbeitete an dem Analogcomputer, und dann haben wir gesagt, wir müssen mal was zusammen machen. Und dann hat sich das ergänzt. Also ich konnte sagen, damit so eine Oszillation passiert, gibt es dieses Gleichungssystem, da wird das dazu addiert, hier wird was subtrahiert. Und Wolfgang wusste dann, wie man das als Elektronik auch wirklich also physisch realisiert, wie man diese, wie man dann auch eine Kopplung machen kann, die eben additiv ist oder subtraktiv. Und das war eigentlich so, das war, ist so der, sozusagen der Kern. Also alles dreht sich hier eben um einen speziellen Oszillator und der ist eben diese Übersetzung und das hat eben funktioniert, weil da sich quasi zwei Wissensfelder ergänzt haben.
Genau, vielleicht in dem Zusammenhang ist auch ganz schön, also diese kleinen Boards, die man sieht, die sind auch kompatibel zu diesem Analogcomputer, den ich entwickelt habe. Das sind auch alles offene Hardware-Systeme, also das heißt, man kann die im Netz nachgucken, runterladen und selbst nachbauen, also ich versuche das immer offen zu machen und zum Teil sind da solche Module auch wirklich eingebaut, so. Wenn man genau hingucken würde, sieht man auch noch so, das sind jetzt gar nicht die neuentwickelten, sondern ganz klassische oder meine Analogcomputer. Das heißt, es ist so ein, in manchen Bereichen so eine kleine Mischung von beiden. So, und da haben wir schon die ersten Diskussionen, ist, weil ich jetzt finde, diese Neuronen ist eine Ergänzung zu diesen Analogcomputern so, oder ist das eigentlich was ganz Eigenes? Also das finde ich eine ganz spannende Diskussion noch, die man vielleicht noch führen muss. Aber vielleicht noch auch mal zum Verständnis mit diesen Analogcomputern, also die sind wirklich so in den 40er Jahren mit entwickelt worden und man muss sich wirklich so, das sind jetzt, ich rede jetzt von elektronischen Analogcomputern, aber man muss sich einfach vorstellen, ein berühmter Analogcomputer oder ja, wurde von einem Herrn Philips entwickelt, der hat wirtschaftliche Simulationen gemacht und das waren nur Wassertanks und Wasserpumpen. Ja, so, das war der Computer und das heißt einfach so, der hat es einfach so simuliert, ja, wenn dieser Fonds leer wird, ja, dann füllt sich der andere auf und dann kann die, der Staat wieder Geld reinpumpen und dann so. Und das ist auch ein Analogcomputer, das sind analoge Systeme, die als Modell was simulieren. So. Und das kann man natürlich mit der Elektronik auch machen. So, und wir haben das eben, oder ich habe das eben mit Elektronik gemacht. Ja.
Schön. Gibt es Fragen? Ja, so gut. I mean, actually, what you described in German was exactly my follow-up question, or mostly like how you more concretely design those individual units, right, from your research.
It was really, for me, it was a moment that was like a blast, you know. We sat there, we were still, you know, it was an open field, what we just knew we wanted to collaborate, and it could have been just like, I put my projector here, and Wolfgang puts his projector there, and then we maybe put a cable in between, we were not sure what we would do. And then we started to chat, and I told Wolfgang about this specific model of oscillation I was working with. I showed him the digital simulation of it, and then we started to discuss, so could we do this as a circuit? And then Wolfgang pulled out the breadboard, started to explain me the operational amplifier, which is used at the core of each of these modules. And then I had a twist in my brain between a high pass and a low pass filter, and we discussed through that whether we needed what we needed there. And then in an afternoon, we stick together like on an experimental board the circuit, and then when it started to oscillate, sort of the whole thing was done. It was really a magic moment in one afternoon, so it's not a lot of work.
And now I found out so there already exists some electronic neurons, so people done that as well, but what we did is these Amari, Sun-Chi Amari neurons, so that's the behavior Sun-Chi Amari described how his neuron should work. They are different ones, and people also build different ones, so that we have Sun-Chi Amari.
Are there any questions from...
Yes. Did you consider a more musical approach? So now it's more noisy, so there is a lot of analog electronic music. So
for me, that was one point where, for me, where these neurons hooked me, because I worked with synthesizers and I started to develop or work on a new sequencer for my synthesizers. That was the idea, and certainly I did it digitally and so on. But then Christian came with these Amari neurons and how they make pattern, and I thought, wow, that could be a really nice sequencer. I have not a digital sequencer, a neuron sequencer. And that was the reason for me to say, okay, we try that. Maybe it works. Maybe it could be interesting. And for sure, I'm thinking about really making a proper sequencer out of these neurons for really a music approach.
Yeah. But it's for a kind of random sequencer, like a...
No, it's not a random sequencer, but it works differently. But
yeah.
Because it's like the ring here, you patch them, and certainly at a certain complexity, maybe it's more random. But we found out, so after playing around with that for 1-2 weeks, you have an idea what will happen. It's not like completely random, it's more the slow one connected with that, and maybe it will influence like that. So it's not 100% to say, okay, now it will go like that, but you get an idea how you can control it. So it wouldn't be completely randomness. Yeah.
But it's something, I mean, it's a long way to go to get to something one would really call musical, in the proper term of classical composition, for example. And I think, and that's something I'm interested in, is whether or not you can, because there's this strong link between a score and an algorithm. And scores, and that's why computer music works in a way so well, because in they share something there. You can, to put a score on a computer is relatively easy. It's almost like just writing a computer program. Whereas, of course, when you want to create something that could sound like a score, but that has no score, and that's what we are dealing with here, it's a contradiction in a way, but such a sequencer or like something that generates a sequence that is, on the one hand, interesting and has structure, but it's not fixed in every detail, that's what we are behind. And to that end, it's a starting point.
Can
you
show whether sequences are needed there? So maybe drone music is already just with different frequencies possible.
Kannst du mal dieses Score noch erklären?
Ja, okay. Also die Frage war, ob wir ein Interesse haben, mit dem Ganzen musikalischer zu werden. Also nicht so neuesartig zu arbeiten, und Wolfgang hat einerseits darauf geantwortet, dass er eben im Prinzip dieses Netzwerk, was im Zentrum ist, so eine Art Sequencer ist, also was man normalerweise mit einem Sequencer machen würde, und dass er das, dass er jetzt eigentlich wirklich daran arbeiten will, einen komplexen Sequencer zu bauen, der eben Oszillatoren antriggert, anschaltet, ausschaltet. Und ich habe dann gesagt, dass es eben, also wenn man jetzt musikalisch denkt, dann gibt es die Notation, oder eben, also Notation ist, glaube ich, der Score, also sozusagen die eine Komposition, wo ich eine zeitliche Abfolge von Noten oder Rhythmisierung festlege. Und dass es einen direkten Zusammenhang gibt zwischen solcher Notation und dem Prinzip des Algorithmus, weshalb, sagen wir mal, Computermusik erstmal eigentlich ziemlich einfach ist. Also, weil ich im Computer genau diese Abfolge auch mit einer abstrakten Beschreibung beschreiben kann, und dann führt er das aus. Und was aber eben sozusagen, so was ich eine spannende Frage finde, ist, kann man einfach durch Wechselwirkung von einfachen Systemen, wo nicht zentral so eine Notation festgelegt ist, trotzdem so einen Moment erzeugen, wo man denkt, aha, das hört sich an wie komponiert. Und darauf kam die Frage, wie es denn wäre, wenn man sowas wie Drone-Musik macht, also wo man jetzt gar nicht, wo sich im Prinzip sozusagen kontinuierlich das Ding überlagern und es mehr, also gar nicht so sehr in die Rhythmik reingeht, sondern eher auf Frequenzverschiebung. And I think that if you listen just to the synthesizer, it's almost, it goes into that direction. You get an idea of how one could create complex drums, just using more of those, basically.
This is drone not as the flying drones, it's a long, regular, single note. It's a whole genre of music which is oriented around drone music. Right? It has nothing to do with the other kinds of drones. Any other thoughts? Yes, Ariane?
I hope I make myself well understood. This, you explain how these models are used for
goes the system in a state, the state of the system changes with the input, and then at some point, if for us it stores some interesting information, you say it learned. But anyway, the point is that the state changes with time. Now my question would be, in your case, of course there's no learning in the sense of storing interesting information, but is there a historicity? Do the patterns that always change, say, are there some patterns that maybe can only appear after 2 days running, or 2 months, or 3 years? Do you lose something if you turn everything off?
So, ist die Frage, soll ich nochmal auf Deutsch kurz zusammenfassen?
Ja.
Also die Frage ist, wie weit da Lernen passiert in dem, was wir machen, und ob sich dann über mehrere Tage sozusagen was ändern könnte. And so for now the answer is there is no learning in the system. Because there is no structural change over time. That is a function of what's going on in the network. Also es gibt kein Lernen in dem System. And it's what is interesting is that if you connect those systems to learning, you may get really strange things. Because there are these rhythms, and they may drive into the whole thing may stop to oscillate, for example. Because it will just go into an forever on state, for example, and it is for that reason, I would say, that the temporal dimension is usually in many learning algorithms is ignored. So the temporal dimension of the network. I mean, there are some special cases where it's in, but in what is mostly popular, there is no rhythm. And if you have rhythm and learning combined, you may get it's not so easy to handle. Also wenn man Lernen und diese zeitliche Rhythmisierung zusammenbringt, kriegt man ganz neue Arten von Problemen. Und deswegen wird bei dem, was so mit Lernsystemen gemacht wird, gibt es selten tatsächlich Rhythmen, also intrinsische Rhythmen in den Netzwerken. Das ist eigentlich total, ja, das ist so, ja, ist das, it's one of the, so when we sit down and discuss what could we do, it's one of the things, what we're doing now is something that is not, that doesn't take the metaphor of neural networks serious. What we have is, what would be called a synapse, so the connection from one neuron to the other is modulated. And that creates change, and that is already, that's also, and it's it opens up a world where you can play. It's in these drawings, for example, when two of these systems are strongly connected, they start to coordinate their activation. That means they go in rhythm like this, and when you can play with it, you can just by changing the connectivity between two systems, you can drive a system from going from this into this. And interestingly enough, that's the two states that are really stable. The others are super difficult to tune. So that's one thing we are playing with. So we are, but it's not learning. It's kind of like we use very slow oscillators to modulate how things are connected. And when things are going like this in the drawing, that is when the drawing is going on the diagonal, basically. And then you see how that, so, and there is this timely variation of things going in phase to weird phase relations I can't do with my hands, because my hands are highly connected. So for me it's also this whole exhibition is a kind of like a metaphor on what connectivity really means, that things, when things are connected, they are coordinated, for example. And that's what you, if one looks closely, one sees a lot of coordination, though sometimes it may seem random and chaotic, but there are very lot of moments where things go in coordinated ways.
And we have some also, because you asked if something happened over a long period that is unexpected, we have some of these motors that stops every, I don't know, half an hour or something. We don't know why, because I guess don't have enough. And then it changes the whole pattern of the network. So I don't know, after maybe after some days, maybe it will be differently. I don't know, but it could be. Yeah.
So when you talk about learning here, I mean, learning is Speicheraufnahme?
No, learning would be if the way, if you change the way.
The waiting, right.
Until the network recognizes the cat. That is the goal of learning.
Yeah, that would be really structural change of the connectivity, basically, of the network.
Rewire the system.
Yeah, so you have to physically. But no, or you could.
But that's one of these weird things with these Google networks. So they recognize cats, and then they start to recognize cats and everything. I mean, that is this stupid thing. So I don't know if it's a form artistic approach or interesting to find in everything cats. So I like the slowly changing pattern more.
It's what fascinates me really about this thing is that everything is interface. So every capacitor is in a way an interface because it doesn't always behave the same, and that difference is not abstracted away by some formalization in the thing, but it makes a difference. When you connect the motor directly to the electronics, the motor is modifying the electronics, so the motor is not just an actor, but it's also a sensor. And when you, so there are a lot of ways where you, where it has a real openness to the world, I would say. Even the resistors, you know, when you, these are kind of like normalized parts. So you buy a transistor, and it says 1 kilo ohm. Then you measure, and of course it doesn't have 1 kilo ohm. They all have different values. And then if you, I'm sure if you measure at different temperatures, they have different values. The conductance of the material changes, which results in different patterns.
And maybe that's interesting because that's where Christian and I met, I would say, because we both make in our art things that has these, I would say in a certain boundaries, it behaves not predictable, not 100% predictable. So his motors touch the string, and sometimes they stop, and then the other motor touches the string as well, and then the first one can move again. But that is something that happens sometimes. You don't even know when, but I think that is part of the artistic work to or of both of our work to make systems that are not predictable, but certainly we may try as an artist to make a system that always something happens, or that it still is interesting, because certainly we don't want that everything stops for 10 hours, but you can't predict when it stops, or maybe it stops the moment when you look at it or not. And the same is my ferrofluids, these liquids, they always look different. So it's certainly they were attracted by a magnetic field, but what the liquids does, sometimes they're more fluid, more less fluid, I don't know even. And then that's why they look always different. And that is, so on the visual approach, and now I think we have it also on the controlling level, same thing.
Ja, aber das ist mehr ein Kommentar. Also mehr gar nicht so richtig eine Frage, aber was ich damit das Poetischste an dem Ganzen finde, ist eigentlich, du hast gerade gesagt, Wolfgang, dass man versucht, Systeme unkontrollierbar oder nicht ganz vorhersehbar zu machen. Aber ich habe mal mit einem Biologen gesprochen, der irgendwie Wahrscheinlichkeitsforschung betreibt, irgendwie auf einem hohen Level, der dann auch damit kam, ja gut, wir haben diese Systeme und wir erstellen, wir versuchen die zu berechnen, also Organismen, wir versuchen Formeln aufzustellen, wie wir die ablesen können und manchmal passiert es halt doch, dass sie unvorhersehbar reagieren. Und also ist doch alles ganz legendär und eigentlich mystisch. Wobei ich immer nur gedacht habe, vielleicht ist es auch, also ich meine, große Offenheit für alle Mystik, aber eigentlich würde ich eher annehmen, dass der menschliche Geist immer vergisst, was noch diese Systeme mit beeinflusst. Und dass es in solchen Momenten eigentlich vielleicht berührt wird. Und dass diese Systeme, wenn sie diese Regelmäßigkeit haben, in dem Moment ihres Ausbruchs vielleicht eigentlich eröffnen sozusagen was anderes noch, also dass da eine Einflussnahme ist und völlig real ist, die, also dass, ob das eine Anwesenheit oder eine Präsenz von etwas ist, das man nicht bedacht hat. Oder das eigentlich sozusagen, und ich meine es gar nicht jetzt, es muss überhaupt nicht mystisch oder sonst was sein, sondern also ganz real. Ja, eigentlich könnte man ja forschen sozusagen, weil ihr habt am Anfang die ganze Zeit davon gesprochen, wie ihr, dass es um Abbildungsverhältnisse geht. Und was wird eigentlich abgebildet? Und wie denken wir etwas? Und dass eigentlich vielleicht das Denken über die Dinge justiert werden müsste, über das, was ihr dann sichtbar macht.
Oder? Das ist vielleicht interessant, weil ich finde, das geht ja meistens so, dass man, wenn man am Meer steht und die Wellen sieht, das hat was unglaublich Entspannendes. Und das ist genau das, man weiß zwar, es kommen die Wellen, aber eine ist größer, eine ist kleiner, ist immer anders, es klingt immer anders und so weiter. Und offensichtlich ist das etwas, was uns unglaublich stimuliert. Also so gesehen ist natürlich, Systeme zu schaffen als Künstler, die also eine ähnliche Stimulanz haben, natürlich was unglaublich Schönes. Ja. Und vielleicht wirken die dann auf unsere Neuronen.
Als Differenz, was man wirklich sagen kann, ist, wenn ich mir einen Digitalcomputer ansehe, der schafft sozusagen wie eine ideale Laborsituation, weil es wirklich darum geht, durch Abstraktion einen Transistor, also es sind ja eigentlich auch nur Transistoren, also Schaltelemente, aber die werden eben in dem Modus betrieben, wo die verlässlich schalten. Mhm. Wo die nicht mehr verlässlich schalten, kriege ich quasi Störungen, da gibt es wieder Methoden, damit umzugehen, aber das ist eigentlich immer was versucht wird, rauszunehmen, damit, weil das eben, das ist die Idee und das hat auch dazu geführt, dass Analogcomputer sich nicht durchgesetzt haben, weil die eben abhängig von den, also weil es eben viel schwieriger war, immer dieselbe Laborsituation zu erzeugen. Tatsächlich ist es so, wenn man ein Lab jetzt transportiert in ein anderes Land und baut es da auf und man macht sozusagen denselben Versuchsaufbau, kann man andere Ergebnisse kriegen. Und das ist natürlich, das ist nicht, stimmt nicht überein mit dem Bild von Wissenschaft, also Reproduzierbarkeit. Aber aus einer künstlerischen Perspektive ist genau da das Spannende. Das war auch so, sagen wir mal, unsere erste Idee, warum wir gesagt haben, das lohnt sich da reinzugehen, weil genau das zu explorieren, da ist ein künstlerisches Potenzial, weil das eben genau eine Offenheit schafft und auf eine Art eben auch so eine Mystik, an der ich auch interessiert bin. Genau.
Aber ist der bipolare Digitalcomputer nicht auch eine ganz massive wirtschaftliche Geschichte gewesen und eben auch im Kalten Krieg, um zum schnellen Ergebnis zu kommen und nicht speziell wissenschaftlich? Wissenschaftlich hätte man auch mit dem Treibhol oder sonst was möglicherweise viel präzisere Ergebnisse gekriegt.
Das kommt noch dazu. Ja. Also, dass da noch eine gesamt andere Dynamik mit da drumherum ist, auf jeden Fall, das stimmt schon. Also, die Kommerzialisierung dieser Systeme als EDV-Apparate, dafür sind sie am allerbesten geeignet, also Organisationsstrukturen abzubilden, hat zum Durchbruch geführt und irgendwann hat man gemerkt, man kann die aber wieder missbrauchen, um damit auch Simulationen zu machen. So gesehen stimmt das. Also vielleicht war der eigentliche Grund noch ein anderer. Aber es war auf jeden Fall auch immer was als ein Nachteil von Analogrechnern beschrieben wurde. Und ich finde eben diesen, also das, was sozusagen da den Fehler ausmacht, ist aber eigentlich das, was ganz viel Potenzial birgt. Aber das stimmt.
So what you have in digital computation and in coming back to the grounding, you have these, for example, ideal transistors. Your system would be made up of every transistor being perfect. And that's not what's happening in real life and in real electronics. This makes for a very interesting area of speculation about, like, what do we really know? Mm-hmm. Right? Because now we can see that, and that's, I guess, what you're pointing to, there's an incredible complexity of the material world, mm-hmm. right? And your work embraces that complexity in a way and elaborates that complexity. And then we have a sense of mystery or a sense of the unknown, mm-hmm. which is still alive there, not excised away into a digital perfect model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because when you simulate these Amari neurons, or like you did, or you told me, is when you write a program that behaves like these neurons, you said, well, will never start to oscillate. Because in the computer, in the program, in the virtual world, there are two perfect systems, and two perfect systems don't start to oscillate. You need a real system where there's imperfection in it, so one capacitor is a bit stronger than the other, so okay, it starts to oscillate. And so you have to make it artificial.
You need noise, basically.
Yeah, you put an artificial noise in the computer models so that they start to oscillate. So you put some artificial mystic in it, if you want. Yeah. So.
And here in your system, you can, you, noise is part of the system.
Yeah.
Yes, noise comes for free.
Noise comes
for
free.
Rauschen ist einfach da. Ne? Genau, so, ja.
But so interesting, you know Reinberger with his idea of experimental system and epistemic things. Yeah, genau. And the digital system kind of tries to make us understand that there is something like epistemic things, but what you point of with this cognition of materiality is pointing out that there are that yeah it's like this is as if diese These bestätigen würde es gibt keine epistemischen Dinge, so and maybe that material aspect is getting lost in a way.
We get in a false sense of control
because
everything works.
Well, I mean, it works. It's the other thing, that's why we had been discussing whether or not this is doing any computation.
Mm-hmm.
And there is this, I mean, in German, it works better. It's informatik, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about bringing things into a form,
mm-hmm.
Formalizing. And that is the first thing that's being, what's being done on a digital computer. It's brought into that specific form of zero or one,
mm-hmm.
and that there is a transition in between is doesn't matter on the level where the operations take
mm-hmm.
place, and in that sense, there are these people who say that matter matters, you know, but in the computer it doesn't matter. I mean, it has been tuned for so much time that it doesn't really matter. At least not on the levels of what is being computed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in such a system, of course, matter matters. And that's kind of like where there is a division, I would say. Absolut, ich finde, also deswegen finde ich das auch sozusagen als Metapher auch relevant, weil das eben nochmal eine andere Art zeigt, wie man über Dinge denken kann, die nicht in Form sind. Und daraus kann eben dann, also das ist sozusagen ein ganz anderes Spielfeld. Das ist auch, was der Wolfgang geschrieben hat. Ne? Da fängst du plötzlich an, du kannst überall Verbindungen machen und gucken, was passiert. Das ist plötzlich wieder ein echtes Spielfeld aufgemacht, weil die Formen nicht fest sind.
Und ich finde es schon auch, also wir sind so gewöhnt, mittlerweile an diese Algorithmen zu glauben. Ich finde es da höchst problematisch. Also wir haben das irgendwann entdeckt, die haben alle ihre Algorithmen niederlaufen, und wenn irgendwas schief läuft, dann muss man den Algorithmus wechseln, muss man den ändern. So. Und überhaupt nicht mehr daran denken, nein, das ist ja in der physikalischen Welt. So, also das Tesla-Auto, was dann Unfall baut, da war vielleicht der Algorithmus total in Ordnung, aber die Kamera ging einfach in die Sättigung. So, Punkt. So, ja, vielleicht sollte man da mal hingucken. Aber wir sind so fokussiert, nur mehr was auf dieser digitalen Prozessebene passiert und gar nicht mehr vergessen dann diese physikalische.
Also der wollte ich ja dann noch sagen, für mich ist Wissenschaft auch ein anderer Begriff. Also diese Perfektion ist nicht unbedingt wissenschaftlich, sondern ab einem gewissen Level sind wir auch in der Wissenschaft in einem Versuchsmodell, was so und so sein kann und nicht wie der Computer sozusagen alles genau berechnet.
Ja. Entscheidungen treffen, aber mit Gefühl.
Ja, aber ich glaube, aber wenn man historisch erklären will, warum der Computer so ist, dann hat das eben damit zu tun. Das ist sozusagen das ist genau die Idee, dass der eben immer dasselbe raushaut. Nicht?
Und
das
ist ich.
Das macht er, und das hat schon mit der ersten Abstraktion zu tun. Also weil der eben eigentlich, weil man den Computer eigentlich nur als Symbolverarbeitungsmaschine verstehen kann. Und das, da ist die Abstraktion drin. Dieses Symbol ist nicht gegroundet. Ne? Das braucht, also der braucht das eigentlich nicht. Oder der will das auch. Also der will das gar nicht. Wenn ich mir diese die Theorien zu Berechenbarkeit und Berechnung ansehe, die brauchen eigentlich. Alle, die sind alle abstrakt auf Symbol, die arbeiten auf Symbolebene. Und